Okay, we're going to start here from the Mishnah on Hey Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Ezohi Ir Gedola. What defines a location as being a large city, where they would read on the 14th, versus Kfarim, the villages that move back to the 11th, 12th, or 13th if they so choose. So, Koshiesh Ba Sarah Batlanin. If you have 10 people who are designated for the purposes, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, of being in the Beit Knesset and being available to make the minyan, those individuals, if they exist and are paid by the tzibur to ensure that the Beit Knesset always has a minyan on time, then it's called an ir gedola. Pachod mikan, less than that number, arizekfar, that's already considered to be a village, and a village then has the dispensations that we spoke about in the first Mishnah, which is that they can read on the 11th, 12th, or 13th. Now the Mishnah says be'elu referencing with regards to Purim. Amru makdimim v'lo ma'achrim. With regards to the days of Purim, when it comes to the Kfarim, we move them up to the 11th, 12th, and 13th. We don't push them back off of the 14th or 15th to the 16th or 17th. That's only true with regards to Purim and the moving of Purim to an earlier date. Aval, but there are many other instances where we need chet, where whatever the day was supposed to be has a problem, we have to move it. When we move it, me'achrin, we delay it, we bring it after that point in time, which is, aval zman atzei kohanim va'am, which we saw in the Gemara and Tanit, the days in which families were designated to bring their wood to the Mikdash. If that falls out on a Shabbat, we postpone it till after Shabbat. Vit tisha be'av, similarly, tisha be'av that falls out on Shabbat, we postpone it until after Shabbat. Rashi says, v'adin, v'yudzayin betamuz, u'lasara betevet. Rashi says the same is true of the other fast days. We know that's true by yudzayin betamuz, if it falls out on Shabbat, it's nidche to Sunday. Just like Tisha B'Av. So then why does the Mishnah only bring Tisha B'Av? It's because, as Rashi says, Huchbalut bo tzarot, it has the extra terrible things that took place on that day. And it's the only day from the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah that remains a Tanit Tzibur, even Bizman Hazeh. And in addition to that, the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah says that with the other regards to the other fast days, Ratzu Mitanim, Ratzu Ein Mitanim. If they so choose to fast, they can. If they don't choose to fast, they don't have to fast. Our minhag, and the way that we have it today, is that we are Mekabel to have them as fast days. But because Tisha B'Av is the only one we know for sure you're going to fast on, therefore the Mishnah mentions it. Rashi says over here, but the same would be true of Yudzayin B'Tamuz, which is the way that we practice, but also Sarah B'Tevet. That turns out to be a Machloket Rishonim. Over here, it's clear that Rashi believes that if a Sarah Tevet fell out on Shabbat, you would postpone it until Sunday. We do not have that practice because our calendar is fixed in such a way that a Sarat B'Tevet cannot fall out on Shabbat. And that is because there are a group of Rishonim who believe that if a Sarat B'Tevet falls out on Shabbat itself, that we'd actually fast on Shabbat. And that's to do with the nature of the Psukim with regards to a Sarat B'Tevet. And because of that, a Sarat B'Tevet never falls out on Shabbat. And because of that, it's the only fast day that actually can fall out on a Friday. Because we can only adjust the calendar to avoid a single day. We can't adjust the calendar to avoid two consecutive days. So if we're avoiding Shabbat, then we can't avoid Friday. With all the other taniyot, we don't worry if they fall out on Shabbat because we move them around. Whereas Vesara Teve, which we're not going to move, it can fall out on a Friday, not a Shabbat. But you see here from Rashi that he believes that that is not the case, and that if Vesara Teve fell out on Shabbat, you would push it off until Sunday. Chagiga, the Shalmei Chagiga that are brought on the Yom Tov, those are nitchet. If the Yom Tov falls out on Shabbat, you can't bring the Shalmei Chagigah on Shabbat, and you postpone it till later. V'haghel, the gathering of the people on Motzei Yom Tov Arishon in the Mikdash in the 8th year, meaning the first year of the next Shemitah cycle, if it falls out on Shabbat, we also push it off, we push it later. Yerushalmi asks, why is that the case? Because they have to set up the bima. They have to set up the platform on which the king sat, and he read from the Mishnah Torah, and they can't do that on Shabbat. Mar Yushalmi says, well, then why don't you just do it before Yom Tov? They say, because it's going to be too crowded in the Azara. On Yom Tov itself, there were so many people there, they didn't want to take up the space for the Bima prior to it being necessary on the Motzei Yom Tov. And so therefore, they wait until Motzei Yom Tov. It's Shabbat. They can't set it up. They don't do it until afterwards. Rashi quotes the other reason, which is of the Bavli, which is a requirement that the Tapim, that the young kids be brought to Hakel. And if it's Shabbat, you can't carry the young kids to Hakel, that's why you can't do it on Shabbat. So in all these instances, ma'achrim velo makdimim. We postpone it and we don't bring it forward. So the reasons we're going to see in the Gemara, but for Chagiga and Hakel, it's a technical problem, which is obvious, which is that if you move it forward, it won't be on the Yom Tov itself. So you need to postpone it. With regards to Tisha B'Av, the Gemara will give us the reason. It's manatzei akonim va'am. The reason is not given in the Gemara. And we'll have to address that when we go through the other items that are there. Now, afa pi shamru makdimim, even though they say with regards to the days of Purim that they're makdim them, we bring them forward, the Gra eliminates from the girsa here velo ma'achrin, Mutarim be'aspeda b'tanit. They do not have the restrictions of the 14th or 15th of Adar, which are asurim in eulogies and in fasting. U'matanot le'avyonim. We saw this already in the Gemara before in yesterday's daf, that matanot le'avyonim go along with the Kriyat HaMegillah, because then he looked towards Kriyat HaMegillah for matanot le'avyonim. Therefore, when they read earlier on the 11th, 12th, or 13th, they also give matanot le'avyonim on that day, and those days are not the asurim be'aspeda b'tanit. Only the 14th and 15th are asurim be'aspeda b'tanit. Amr Yehuda, Eimatai. When does this din of the villages moving up to 11th, 12th, and 13th apply? Magom shenichnasim b'sheni b'chamishi. It's only in a place where the villages have the practice to enter into the major cities on Mondays and Thursdays. On the Mishnah, we discussed the fact that Rashi says that that has to do with the fact that it was Yom HaMishpat, that it was the day of adjudication when the courts were open and then people from the villages would come in. The Rabbeinu Chananel suggested it was the day that they had Kriyat HaTorah and they used to come in to daven with a minyan and hear Kriyat HaTorah. And it's also Yom HaShuk. It was the day in which they had the Shuk. So all of these reasons are reasons that generally the suburbs or the villages would come in on Monday and Thursday. If that's their practice, then the whole idea of moving up to 11th, 12th, and 13th is relevant because then they have a Yom HaKnisah. And again, the difference of opinions that we saw in the Mishnah, whether that means because if they come in on Yom HaKnisah, then they're not going to come again on Purim, or the other way around. If they're coming in Purim, they're not going to come on Yom HaKnisah. So we adjust it so that they only have to make one trip in. And then we also saw the Machloket as to whether the villagers come into the city and they read it in the city, or whether the people from the city go out to the villages and help them out to read it, not on Purim, meaning on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. Yehuda says it's only relevant when they come in on Mondays and Thursdays. Places where they don't have such a practice, then there's no reason to move it up to 11th, 12th, or 13th, because they don't generally come in on that day. So there's no benefit in moving it to Yom HaKnisah. We're going to put them on Purim, like everybody else, and they'll be on the 14th. And again, we saw that on the first daf with regards to Rav Ashi, who brought a stira between the Braita of Rabbi Yehuda and the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda, and he reconciled by saying that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, but the Braita before was Rabbi Yossi, be Rabbi Yehuda. So this is the Mishnah that he quoted over there. So now the Gemara explains, Tana, Asara Batlanim, we're talking about 10 people who are not working. That's not just 10 people who aren't working, it's but Asara Batlanim, Bishib Bebeit HaKnesset, that are found in the shul. As Rashi explains, V'nizonim Mishal Tzibor, they're supported by the community, K'dei Liot Mitzuyim B'Tfilah Bebeit HaKnesset, in order to be available in the shul, so that there's always a minion, as Rashi quotes over here, a technicality from the Gemara Brachot, which is that the Shekhinah comes at the time that the minion is set, and if there aren't 10 people there, the Shekhinah leaves. The Shekhinah comes, he wants to know that the minion's there right on time, that they start on time. You could also argue just that they have a minion, that there will always be a minion because they have a Sarah Batanim, so there's no question about the fact that you have a minion, and this is a practice that was kept. I know that my grandfather used to ensure that the shul had a minion by paying the poor people in the community to be available during the times of minyan, exactly this concept of asara bat lanim. Right now, the Gemara asks about this. Be'elu amru makdimim v'lo ma'achrim, my time. What's the reason? So amar Rabbi Abba m'shmo makra v'lo yavor. By the Yimei Purim, we saw this earlier in the Masechta on Daf Bet, that lo yavor means you can't pass these days. Well, the 14th and 15th are mentioned explicitly in the Megillah, and when it says lo yavor means you can't have anything later than that day, and that means that the only option is to go earlier, not to go later. Right now we're going to have another statement from Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, nothing to do with our sugya, totally independent, but since it's the same individual, Amora, who's making the statement, it's brought over here together with his other statement, which is, Minayin Shemonim Yamim L'Shanim. How do we know that the component parts of a year are not days, but rather chodashim, but months? Shenemar L'Chodshei HaShana, chodashim atamoneh l'shanim, v'atamoneh yamim l'shanim. You count the year by months, and you do not count the year by the days. This has a nafka mina l'alacha, for instance, in terms of a leap year. When we have a leap year, we add in a month to the calendar. We don't add in the specified number of days that we need. We add in a full month because that's a component part of a year. In addition to that, Rashi quotes it here in terms of a person who says, Konem yayin shani toim. The person says, takes a neder that he's not going to drink wine for an entire year. Then he counts 12 months from day to day. And if he started on the 1st of Nisan, he's asur until he reaches the 1st of Nisan in the subsequent year. We don't check that there's 11 days less in the lunar year than there is in the solar year, so on and so forth. Or when there's a leap year, it'll be the other way around. We don't worry about that. We go to the exact date in the month, and you go back to that. You don't count individual days. You don't look at this on a component parts of days, but rather component parts of months. And the same is true with regards to the component parts of a month itself. Minayin shein mechashvim sha'ot l'chodashim, that we don't count hours in a month. Shnemar ad chodesh yamim. Yamim ata mechashev v'chodeshim, v'ata mechashev shaot v'chodeshim. You only count months by days and not by hours. And that again has a nafkamina in terms of the calendar. When it comes to a month, even though the lunar month is 29 and a half days, we don't have that be the calendar month as being 20 and a half days. We either have a 29-day month or we have a 30-day month. Because days are the component parts of a month. You don't break it down into hours and have a half a day as part of a month. So that's one nafkamina, that we only have months that are 29 and 30 days. The other nafkamina, as Rashi says again, when a person gives, for instance, a get al tanai, and says, if I come by such and such a time, or by come by the end of the month, it doesn't matter that the month or the lunar month is 29 and a half days. If they make Rosh Chodesh after 29 days, it's a chaser month, that's the end of the month. And that's what counts as the month. We don't count the exact hours of the month, we count the days of the month. And therefore, this is that statement of Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, which is that the years are broken down into months, and the months are broken down into days. Alright, so now the Gemara continues. Aval, zman atzei kohanim v'tisha ba'av v'chagiga v'haghel ma'achrim v'lo makdimim. So now we have the other instances in the Mishnah where we postpone it and we do not bring it forward. So Tisha B'Av, the reason by Tisha B'Av, and we discussed this before, which is Akdume Puranut Lo Mikadme. We don't move bad items, bad things, inauspicious days, we don't try to move them forward. So therefore we're going to postpone it. If we have a choice with regards to Tisha B'Av, whether we're going to delay it or we're going to bring it forward, it's a terrible day. So we're going to try to postpone it or push it out as far as possible. That's why when it falls out on Shabbat, we postpone it to Sunday. We don't bring it forward to Thursday or Friday. Again, when we spoke about this with regards to Tanit Esther, that shows you that Tanit Esther is very different than the other fast days, because by Tanit Esther, we actually do bring it forward. We bring it up to, if it falls out on Shabbat, we actually bring it up to the Thursday before. So we are Mekadme, which indicates that Tanit Esther is not associated with Puranut, like the other fast days of the year. Chagiga v'hakel. Chagiga and hakel, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, are technical problems. Mishum dakati lo mata zman chiyuvayu. If you're going to move chagiga forward, then it's not Yom Tov. If the first day of Yom Tov is Shabbat, then we postpone bringing the chagiga until after Shabbat. If you moved it before Shabbat, it would be Erev Yom Tov, and there's no obligation to bring the chagiga, so it makes no sense to bring it forward. The same is true with the hakel. Hakel is after the Yom Tov Rishon. So if you brought it forward, it wouldn't be on Yom Tov Rishon, it should be before Sukkot already. So therefore, it wouldn't make sense. You want to do it on Sukkot itself, and you want to do it on Chol HaMoed, so therefore we push it back, not bring it forward or earlier. Now, that's with regards to Tisha B'Av, we explained, Chagiga, we explained, Hagel, we explained. The one thing we did not explain from the Mishnah was, Aval Zman Atzei HaKohanim V'Am. That, we don't give any explanation as to why we postpone it, and we do not bring it forward. Rashi says that's because it is like a neder, that the Zman Atzei HaKohanim V'Am is a neder on which the individuals bring their wood on that day. And until they've come to that day, they haven't triggered the neder. So if we were to move it forward, if we were to move it earlier, they would not have yet reached the point of obligation, which is their neder. And it wouldn't make sense. So we postpone it when it falls or coincides with Shabbat, because now they're obligated in the neder and they need to discharge it. So we want them to cross over or to meet the neder first, and then, only then are they obligated, and then we postpone it. So they're, again, similar to the problem of Chagiga, which is that until you're obligated, it doesn't make sense to engage in this mitzvah. So that's why we postpone it and not bring it earlier. So too, by Zman Atzei HaKohanim V'Am. Right now we have a Tano. Chagiga v'chol Zman Chagiga Me'achrim. We have a Braita that says, Chagiga, as well as the time of Chagiga, we delay. So Gemara says, Bishlama Chagiga, I understand why you would postpone the Chagiga. If the first day of Yom Tov falls on a Shabbat, machrin la bata shabto, we postpone it until after Shabbat on Chol HaMoed, when you can bring the Chagigah. Zman Chagigah mahi. What is this time of the Chagigah that gets postponed? So now we're going to have three different answers in the Amoraim. The first is Amar Rav Hoshaya, Hachi Kamar. This is what it's meant. Chagigah b'Shabbat, volat riyah afilu b'Yom Tov. A Chagigah, the Shalmei Chagigah, can be brought on Yom Tov. It cannot be brought on Shabbat. So when a Chagiga falls out on Shabbat, we postpone it. Olat Riyah, not only can it not be brought on Shabbat, it also cannot be brought on Yom Tov. The difference being that a Shlamim has a portion of it that's eaten by the people, and therefore it's classified as Ochel Nefesh. And Olah, which goes entirely Lashem, doesn't have a tzad of Ochel Nefesh to it, and therefore you can't bring it on Yom Tov. So if the Shalmei Chagiga, or the Chagiga falls out on Shabbat, the Yom Tov Rishon Shabbat, we postpone it until afterwards. Olat Riyah. Again, if Yom Tov, you can't bring the Olat Riyah, which you're obligated to bring when you come up to the Mikdash, you don't bring it on Yom Tov, you postpone it till after Yom Tov. So that's what it means. Olat Riyah, filu b'Yom Tov, Zman Chagigah Me'achrin. You postpone it until the Zman Chagigah, the time when you're bringing the Chagigah, then you also bring the Olat Riyah at other times during the Yom Tov. So Mani, who's the author of that Braita then? Beit Shammai, it has to be Beit Shammai, the Tanan. Beit Shammai Omrim, Mevim Shlamim B'Yom Tov, Vein Somchim Aleim. You can bring your Shlamim on Yom Tov, but you can't do Smicha on them because it's a problem of Shvut or Mishtamesh Behema. They also believe that you don't need Smicha, take of the Hakrava, take of the Shkita. You don't have to do your Smicha immediately before you do the Hakrava. So you do the Smicha on Erev Yom Tov, and then you shech the animal on Yom Tov for Shlamim. Of a lo olot. Olot are not allowed to be brought on Yom Tov. Of Beit Hillel Omrim, Mevim Shlamim Ve'olot, Visomchim Aleim. Number one, you bring Shlamim. And they believe you need to take the shkita smicha, that you have the smicha right before you shecht it. Therefore, you do the smicha on Yom Tov itself. And you bring the shlamim on Yom Tov. So everybody agrees. You bring the shamei chagiga on Yom Tov. And everybody agrees that if it falls out on Shabbat, you cannot bring it. But Olot, Beit Hillel says you can bring Olot on Yom Tov. Whereas Beit Shammai says you cannot bring Olot on Yom Tov. Beit Shammai says you cannot bring Olot on Yom Tov because there's a miut by Ochel Nefesh. Because by Ochel Nefesh it says lachem. And the miut that Beit Shammai learns is lachem velo legvoa. Means for you and not for Hekdesh. And so Hekdesh is precluded for you doing Melachot on behalf of Hekdesh, and Olot are basically all for Hashem. On the other hand, Beit Hillel says Lachem is not coming to exclude the Gvoha, but Lachem v'lo l'nachrim, or Lachem v'lo l'klavim. There are other drashot that Lachem excludes, and you do include Olot, and they can be brought on Yom Tov. So clearly, the author of this Braita, the way Rav Hoshaya is explaining it, is Beit Shammai, because they're saying here that the postponement of Chagigah has to do when the Shamei Chagigah, Yom Tov Rishon, coincides with Shabbat. You can't bring the Shlamim on Shabbat, so you postpone it. The Zman Chagigah that's referencing here is talking about the Olot. The Olot Re'iyah, which cannot be brought on Shabbat, but that's the same as Shamei Chagigah, but also cannot be brought on Yom Tov. And who says you can't bring an Olah on Yom Tov? That is Beit Shammai. So therefore, the Braita would be authored by Beit Shammai, explaining the two times where these korbanot get postponed. The time when the shlamim get postponed, or the time when the olot get postponed. Rav Amar, Rav explains this braita differently. Chagiga, kol zman chagiga, machrin, tfei lo. He reads it as one statement, which is, the chagiga you're allowed to postpone. How far can you postpone it? Kol zman chagiga, as long as it's still the chag. As long as it's the chag, you can postpone it. Tvei, once you pass the chag, you can't make up the chagiga that you did not bring. That's not the Mishnah, we've seen this Mishnah before. Whoever didn't bring their chagigah on the first day of Yom Tov, you can continue to bring it the entire regel. And even on Shmini Atzeret you can bring it. Once Yom Tov passes, and you didn't bring your shamei chagigah, it's avar yomo batel korbano. Once the Yom Tov is passed, the korban is no longer relevant. If you didn't bring it by that point in time, there's no more makeup period. So if you bring it during Yom Tov, then you make up for the fact that you didn't bring it on the first day. That's a machloket we know in the Gemara as to whether the other days that you bring the Chagiga, are they tashlumi in the Rishon? Are they a makeup for the first day? Or is every day an obligation? If you've already discharged your obligation, then fine. If you haven't, then each day creates an independent obligation. That's a machloket in the Gemara as to which way we view it. But either way, you have the entitlement to either do tashlumi in the Rishon to make up for the first day when you didn't bring your Chagiga, or you have an obligation each day to bring the Chagigah. That's only true during Yom Tov itself. Once Yom Tov passes, it's not the case anymore. So that's how Rava reads that Braita. The Chagigah is relevant, Chol Zman Chagigah. Rav Ashi, here's the third way to read the Braita, Amar. Chagigah v'chol Zman Chagigah me'achrin. Not only do you postpone the Chagigah, but the period of makeup for the Chagigah you also postpone. V'afilu atzeret dechad yom me'achrin. And even atzeret, Shavuot, which is one day of Yom Tov, we postpone it. And that is because the Chagigah gets postponed because there is a Zman Chagigah for every Yom Tov. Now, by Pesach and by Sukkot, it coincides with the Yom Tov itself. The 7 days of Chagigah, or in Sukkot it's 8 days of Chagigah, are on the days of Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed. By Shavuot, which is a one-day Yom Tov, the 7 days, one of those days is Yom Tov, but the remaining days are days of Tashlumim, even though it's not Yom Tov. And that's what Rav Ashi comes to say. The Chagigah gets postponed, b'chol zman chagigah. And that is that there is a zman chagigah that applies to every one of the yamim tovim. And therefore, when it comes to Shavuot, there will also be 6 days of makeup or ability to bring the chagigah if you didn't bring it on Shavuot itself. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah, Modim. Both agree, I mean, this is Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, both agree, Shimcha Latzer Diot b'Shabbat. If Shavuot falls out on Shabbat, Shiyom Tvoach Achar Shabbat. The day in which you bring the Shalmei Chagigah is on Sunday. That's when you bring your Olot Riyah, that's when you bring your Shalmei Chagigah. Because you have to postpone it. You can't bring it on Shabbat itself. Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai disagree in a case where Yom Tov falls out on Friday. If Yom Tov falls out on Friday, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai both agree you can bring the Chagigah on the Friday. With regards to Olot Riyah, Beit Hillel says you can bring it on Friday. Beit Shammai says you can't bring it on Yom Tov, but the next day is Shabbat. So you can't bring it on Shabbat either. You have to bring it on Sunday. So that's where their machloket is. And here Modim is, they both agree that if it falls out on Shabbat, everything gets postponed until Sunday. So you see from here that Sunday is considered to be a Tashlumim, or a day that you can bring your Chagigah and your Olot Riyah. So based on that, you see that the Zman Chagigah extends even for Shavuot, that it's not only on the day of Yom Tov, it's not only within the context of Yom Tov, but it's 7 days, including the first day of Yom Tov, and that's true by Shavuot as well. So those were three different ways to explain the Braita that we quoted about the Chagigah and Zman Chagigah. Now we move on to another item, which is Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Natan Netiyah B'Purim, Rabbi planted a tree on Purim, V'rachatz B'Krona Shel Tzipori. He went ahead and went into the bathhouse and bathed himself on the Yom HaShuk publicly in Tzipori, B'Shivasar B'Tamuz. So here is Minyan de Yoma on the 17th of Tamuz. We already mentioned in the Mishnah, now we're mentioning it again. Shivasar B'Tamuz, he went and he bathed. U'Bikesh Lagor Tisha B'Av. And he wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av, Lo Hodu Lo. And the Chachamim did not agree. So now what you have here is what I've heard from Meir Lichtenstein terms as Hafganot Datiyot. These are religious demonstrations, and Rabbi's making sure to do them in public. He's doing acts that are very public in order to make a statement about a halachic issue. So with regards to Purim, he's doing malacha on Purim. With regards to Shiva Vasar B'Tamuz, he's bathing himself on Shiva Vasar B'Tamuz, which is one of the Chameshit Inuim. And on Tisha B'Av, he wants to be a carrot. That we need to figure out what's going on there. So then, Amar Lefanav, Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda. So Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda says, Rabbi, referring to Rabbi Elazar, Lo kacha ya maseh. That's not what happened with Rabbi. Ella, Tisha B'Av shechaliot b'Shabbat havo. It was a case when Tisha B'Av fell out on Shabbat. V'dachinu l'achar Shabbat. And they postponed it till Sunday. V'amar Rabbi, ho v'nitche, itche. Since we're already postponing it, let's just not have it this year. V'lo hodu chachamim. The Chachamim did not agree, and they said, no, even though it's Nidchet, you still have to commemorate Tisha B'Av, even though it's not on the 9th of Av, it's on the 10th of Av. And Kari Alei, Rabbi Elazar says about Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Tuvim Hashnayim Min HaYachad, that two are better than one, because had Rabbi Elazar not had Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, he would have had a mistaken impression as to what Rabbi was trying to do. Now, with the clarification of Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, it was true that Rabbi wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av, but it was in a very unique case. That was the case where it fell out on Shabbat and was Nidchet. That's where he wanted to get rid of it. But otherwise, he wouldn't get rid of it. Alright, the Gemara is going to discuss the item of Purim and planting on Purim. I just want to address the other two issues, which is number one, the bathing on Shivasar B'Tamuz. Tosfot says, first of all, Lav Dafa B'Krona. He didn't necessarily do it in the Shuk, but he did it behasya. It's just a statement that he did it very publicly. And then he says, wait a minute, why is he bathing on Shivasar B'Tamuz? If he wants to show you that Shivasar B'Tamuz is really not a fast day, he should have eaten on Shivasar B'Tamuz. Why is he bathing on Shivasar B'Tamuz? It's based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we saw, that Bizman HaShalom, when there's a time of peace, Batsu Mitanim, Batsu En Mitanim. You can choose whether to be Mitaneh, to fast, or you can choose not to fast. So Rabbi was showing them that these are not obligatory fasts. And that's why on Shiva B'Sar B'Tamuz, he wasn't fasting, he wasn't keeping the Inuim, because he didn't think it was a fast day. So Tosfot says, if that's really what he believed, he should have eaten something in public. He shouldn't have just bathed in public. So Tosfot says, it must be that even in the time of Rabbi, they had the same practice that we have today, which is that Kiblu Alatzman. They had a minhag to fast on those days. But what Rabbi was showing was that these days are only a minhag and a kavalav tanit, but they don't include the Chameshit Inuim. They don't include the five Inuim. They're not a Tanit Sibur. So he demonstrated that by bathing and showing that one of the Chameshit Inuim didn't apply. He was fasting, but he bathed to show it doesn't have the full force of a Tanit Sibur, because it's simply a Midag that they accepted upon themselves to fast on this day. This Tosafot is slightly against what we've quoted in the past from the Mishnah Berurah, who says that Meikar Adin, that when we accepted the fasts, not of Tisha B'Av, but Shiva Sabbatim, the others, that they really should have been a Tanit Sibur of 24 hours, and they really should have been a Chameshit Inuim. The fact is that people couldn't handle it, so we didn't do it. But Meikar Din, that should be the case. In the Chatchilo, if you can be Noeg in the Chameshit Inuim, and even Tanit Sibur, one should have that practice, because that's the Ikar Din of the Yom. Well, here Tosafot says that's not the case, because here you have Rabbi demonstrating that it's not a Tanit Sibur, and showing that it's only a Minog, doesn't have that force of Tanit Sibur, and that there's no reason to abstain from bathing on that day. Number two is Ubikesh Lakor Tisha B'Av. Tosfot asked a very simple question. What was Rabbi thinking? Why would he get rid of Tisha B'Av? Why would he ever want to eliminate Tisha B'Av the Gamre? We just had in the Gemara at the end of Tanit that kol ochel v'shoteh b'tisha b'av eino ro'eh b'nechama shel Yerushalayim. Anybody who ignores Tisha B'Av, anybody who violates Tisha B'Av, will not be zochet to see in the Simcha and the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. And number two is, it was already established by Beit Din that Tisha B'Av is a Tanit Tzibur. Who is Rabbi to come along and change that? So Tosafot gives two answers to this. Either Rabbi held like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, if you remember, in the Gemara and Tanit, suggests that if he had the choice, and it was in his time when they set up Tisha B'Av, he wouldn't have fasted on Tisha B'Av, he would have had Asara B'Av. On the 10th of Av and not the 9th of Av, because the majority of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash took place on the 10th. So that could have been the position of Rabbi, that Rabbi, according to the Tanakhama, according to Rabbi Elazar, before the clarification of Rabbi Avraham Bar Zavda, thought that what it meant that Rabbi wanted to get rid of Tisha B'Av is not the Gamre, but he wanted to move it from the 9th to the 10th, like the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan. Or Inami, you could suggest that he wanted to take it down from a Tanit Tzibur down to a regular fast. That he believed that you did have to fast on Tisha B'Av, he just didn't believe that you should have the full force of a Tanit Tzibur, and that's what the Tanakhama was saying over here. Because we have to give some credence to the Havamin of Rabbi Elazar. What was he thinking when he quoted that Rabbi was Oker Tisha B'Av? So here are two options that don't eliminate Tisha B'Av the Gamre, but change the nature of Tisha B'Av, either moving it from the 9th to the 10th, or making it not a Tanit Tzibur, but a fast similar to Shivas Arba Tammuz. Now, the Gemara is going to address the issue of not planting on Purim. So Gemara says, Rabbi Eichi Natan Etiyah B'Purim. How is it possible that Rabbi planted a tree on Purim? V'atani Rav Yosef. Don't we have a braita that is brought from Yosef, which is Simcha U'Mishte V'Yom Tov. The pasuk in the Megillah, when describing the nature of Purim, it gives you a number of items that transpire on Purim. It says, Al Gena Yehudim Aprazim Hayushvim Barei Prazot Osim Et Yom Arba Asalei Chodesh Adar. Here are the items. What's the day of Purim like? Simcha, umishte, v'yom tov, umishlach manot, ish l're'ehu. So here's a description of the day of Purim. And now the Brit explains. What are each of these items? Simcha, l'meit shasurim behespeit. It's a happy day, which tells you that you cannot have eulogies on that day. Mishte, that has to be, it's a day of feasting. L'meit shasur betanit, that you're not allowed to fast on that day. So there's the Isur of hespeit and tanit on Purim. V'yom tov. What does Yom Tov teach you? Malameich asur v'asiyat melacha. That you're not allowed to do melacha on Purim. So how could Rabbi be planting a tree on Purim when we say in the Megillah that it's a Yom Tov? And that, based on the Braita, suggests that Yom Tov means isur melacha. That you're not allowed to do melacha on it. Ela Rabbi bara beisar havo. So the answer is that Rabbi was a person living in an unwalled city, and therefore his obligation of Purim was on the 14th. Bechinata bechamishar nata. And when he planted the tree, it was on the 15th. So it was the other day of Purim, but it wasn't his Purim. The Gemara says, "Hini, Rabbi b'Tveria havo." Rabbi, at least in a part of his life, lived in the city of Tveria. B'Tveria mukevet chumah mimot Yeshua binun avai. And Tveria has a wall around it from the time of Yeshua binun, and that would make it a 15th that you would read on the 15th. So that means that Rabbi is on the 15th. Ella, so the Gemara reverses it and says, "Ella Rabbi bar chamesar havo." He was a ben krach. He was a ben of a city, had a chumah around it, and therefore he read on the 15th. V'chinato, when he planted the tree, bar baisar havo. He planted on the 14th, which wasn't his day of Yom Tov, his day of Purim. Where it says, "Umi pshita le detveria mukevet chumah miot Yeshua binun." Wait a minute. Why are you so sure that Tveria has a wall around it from the time of Yeshua binun? Ba chizkia kari b'Tveria bar baisar b'chamesar. He alone. Chizkiah read on the 14th and the 15th in Tveria, because he had a safek as to whether it did have a wall around it from the time of Yeshua ben Nun or did not have a wall around it from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. At the end of today's daf, we're going to come back and discuss what his safek was or why this safek arose. So now we have a problem, because if he's living in Tveria, then Rabbi would have had practiced Purim both on the 14th and 15th full-fledged. So how does he plant on one of those days? So Gemara says, no problem. The Chizkiah misapkele, Chizkiah had a safek, the Rabbi pshitele. Rabbi said it was pashut, that it was on the 15th. Gemara says, v'chi pshitele mishari. Even if he knows for sure it's on the 15th, why is he so certain that he can do work on the other day? V'aktiv, v'migilat tanit. It says in Megillat Tanit, yom ha-ba'asar ve'yom chamisha'asar. Yomei puraya inon delo mispei behon. Says that the 14th and 15th are the days of Purim that you can't eulogize on them. The Megillah already tells us that the 14th is restricted and the 15th is restricted. So then what is Megillat Tanit adding for us that we don't already know from the Megillah itself? So Rova says, I'll explain it to you. It comes to teach you that even if you read on the 15th, you have the same restrictions on the 14th. And if you read on the 14th, you still have the same restrictions on the 15th, meaning that the restrictions apply to both days, no matter which day you celebrate as Purim. When it says, that's not a problem, that when we say that they have the same din, that's with regards to eulogies and fasting. Both the 14th and 15th are restricted. When it comes to malacha, that's only on the day that you celebrate as Purim, not on the other day. So now Gemara says, Ini, is that true? He was throwing out flaxseed on Purim, meaning he was seeding the ground with flaxseed on Purim. And he cursed him. And his flax didn't grow because of the curse of Rav. So here you see that Rav, on what seems to be days of Purim, is saying a person may not do malacha. My answer is no. In that case, it was a person who was doing malacha when it was his day of Purim. He was in an unwalled city, it was the 14th, and he was doing the work on the 14th. Or he was in a walled city, and he was doing the work on the 15th. Rabbi did the opposite. He did the work on a day that wasn't his Purim. So that is the Gemara's conclusion and statement until this point in time, is that, yes, in Ochanami, there is an Isur Malacha and Yom Tov of Purim, but it only applies to the day which you celebrate as Purim. It does not apply to the other day of the 14th and 15th. What is common between the 14th and 15th, for no matter who you are, is the fact that there's no Hespeda, no Tanit. That's whether you read on the 14th or the 15th, you may not have Hespeda and Tanit on either of those days. But with regards to Malacha, it only applies to the day on which you actually celebrate Purim. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara until this point. Now we have a different answer, which is Rabba, Brei de Rava Amar. Rabba, the son of Rava. It's interesting here. Rava was adopted by Rabba, and Rava names his son after his adopted father, Rabba. So it's Rabba, Brei de Rava Amar. Afilo Teima Biyome. You can even say that Rabbi did Malacha on his day of Purim, the day that he kept his Purim. Hesped v'tanit kabilu alayhu. When it comes to the restrictions against Hesped v'tanit, the people accepted that as being the din of Purim. Malacha lo kabilu alayhu. When it comes to Malacha, or Isser Malacha on Purim, they did not accept it. Dimi karektiv, because in the original pasuk it says, and that's the pasuk that we quoted before, Simcha u'mishte v'yom tov. Those were the descriptions of the day of Purim. U'besof k'tiv, and later on, they bring another pasuk. It's a more extensive pasuk here. So it says, L'kayim aleihem, li'otosim et yom arba'asar l'chodesh adar, v'et yom chamisha'asar bo, that's what we just quoted before with regards to Megillat Tanit, b'chol shana v'shana, we just did that in yesterday's daf, what we learned out b'chol shana v'shana, k'yamim, asher nachu b'hem ha'yehudim, me'oyvehem, that was one of the opinions that where we get the 11th and 12th, 13th from was k'yamim, the kavod dimyon. Now it gives you the description of what Purim is. Guess what just disappeared in this pasuk? Yom Tov is not found there. So the fact that Yom Tov is not found in the second pasuk, Rabba Barova says, that indicates that they didn't accept it. When Mordechai tried to establish the day of Purim, he made it as a Yom Tov. When the people, when the Am accepted it, they accepted it without the concept of Yom Tov, without it being an Isur Melacha. And that's what's been described in the Gemara here. Me'er karaktiv simcha mishtev yom tov. Over the sov tiv, lasotutam yemei mishtev simcha, ve'ili yom tov lo ktiv. Yom tov is not written there. So in the end, you have mishtev simcha, which precludes hespeid and tanit, but you don't have the din of Yom Tov, so melacha is mutar. Gemara says, okay, if that's the case, v'la Rav, my time alat yudah u'gavra. Why did Rav curse that person who was doing melacha on Purim? It wasn't something that was restricted. It says, Dvarim mutarim, that is something that was mutar. V'acharim nagu behen isur havo. There were people who had a minag not to do malacha on Purim. Even though it's not mi'ikar halacha, but there was a minag not to do malacha. And this person lived in a city that had a minag not to do malacha. So when he went against the minag of his city, that's why Rav cursed him, because others were noeg in isur, and he was in front of them doing the malacha. U'ba'atri d'rabi lo nohog. But in the city of Rabbi, there was no Isur Malacha. They didn't have the minhag of Isur Malacha. And some want to suggest, Olam Nohug. No, that even in Rabbi's city, they had the minhag not to do Malacha on Purim. Rabbi Nata Nitiyah Shel Simcha. Rabbi Nitiyah Shel Simcha Nata. Rabbi actually planted a tree of Simcha, which is permitted. Even in the places that have a minhag not to do Malacha, things for Simcha you can't do. It's none. We have a Mishnah from Tanit, Avruelu. Avruelu means the 13th fast that they have for rain, Pelo Ne'enu. And Hashem has not responded positively and brought them rain, Mema'atim. Then we reduce, Masa Matan, Bebinyanu, Minitiyah, Beirusin, Minisuin. We reduce all of these items, similar to Av. Mishnichnas av v'matim b'simcha. These are also the items that you are mimaitin. Masav matan binyan netia irusin nisuin. These are all items that we restrict. Irusin is the only exception. B'tani Allah. And on that we have a qualifying statement. Binyan. What binyan is restricted? Binyan shel simcha. That's only a binyan of happiness. We'll explain what that means in a second. Netia. Planting is only netia shel simcha. So that's what you're restricted in. So the Isser Melacha, in the case of Av, as well as in the case of the 13 fasts that pass, those are only things that are of Simcha. Regular Masamatan, that's what Tosfot suggests, that this also applies to Masamatan. Masamatan for Simcha is Asur. So I call that Masamatan like for luxury items. That's Asur. But for basic needs, you can do Masamatan, or for basic Parnosa, you can do that during these days. And the same thing with Binyan, and the same thing with Nitiya. If they're necessary and you need to do them, you can do them. It's only when it's for Simcha that is it precluded. So now the Gemara says, okay, Ezu binyan shel simcha. What is a binyan shel simcha? Ze bonah beit chadnot livno. Someone who builds an addition to his house for his son to live in. His son's getting married, so they put on an extra addition to the house. It was one room. It was a one-room apartment in which the new couple would live, and actually they made their wedding there. That would be their chuppah. The chuppah was the new room that he put onto the house. That's a binyan shel simcha. Ezu nitiya shel simcha. What is a planting of simcha? Ze notea avarniki shel melachim. The plant of Avon Kisham Lachim. Rashi over here quotes that Avon Kisham Lachim is a tree that casts a lot of shade, or that some sort of trellising type of climber or vine that they use to create shade. And the kings used to go out there when they ate to eat in the shade or to be mitayel in the shade. This was a tree that's planted for its benefits of shade and for a place of simcha. It's not necessity that it is planted. That's why it's called Shal Simcha. We actually saw this Binyan Shal Simcha. We saw it in Tanit as well. And over there, they explain Avornaki Shel Melachim. Rashi brought two interpretations there. One that we just quoted now. And the other one was that on the day that the crown prince was born, they used to plant a tree. And on the day of his coronation, they used to cut the tree down and make a throne for him out of that tree. So that's also a possibility of what this Ntia Shel Avornaki Shel Melachim is. But either way, what you see here is that with regards to Simcha, there is a concept of Binyan Shel Simcha and Nitiya Shel Simcha. So when it comes to Tisha B'Av, and when it comes to the days after the fast for the rain, where there's no rain, we have to reduce the Simcha, those items are precluded. But we know from the Gemara at the end of Tanit, Kishem Shemaatim B'Simcha, when we enter into Av, Mishnichnas Av, Mishnichnas Av, they're Marim B'Simcha. So it's going to be the polar opposite, or antithetical to what we see in the month of Av. In the month of Av, we're reducing the items of Simcha. By Adar, we're going to increase the items of Simcha. So that means that a binyan shel Simcha and a tiyah shel Simcha are appropriate in Adar and are appropriate on Purim. Because that's exactly what we're trying to engender is Simcha. So the same reason that they're problematic by Av and by Tisha B'Av is the same reason why they would be mutarim and encouraged in Adar and on Purim. So Rabbi was planting something of Simcha, which is not classified as a malacha for Purim, because it's an item that's being done to enhance the Simcha or increase the Simcha of the day, which would be appropriate on Purim. All right, now I want to go back and address a number of items here. The first one I'll address is the issue of minhag. The Gemara says that the minhag was not to do malacha, and this individual went ahead and did malacha. Now Tosfot says, wait a minute. When someone is knowing Isur over here, are they mistaken by the fact that they're keeping Isur Malacha on Purim? The answer is yes. The Yom Tov was not accepted. So why is it that this person is being held accountable for the fact that people have a mistaken minhag? So Tosfot in the end says no. They knew that Malacha was Mutar on Purim. And despite that fact, they had a minhag to be Oser Malacha on Purim. And that minhag carries weight because it's not a minhag tot. It's a minhag knowing what the din of Purim is. And it's appropriate. That type of minhag is appropriate. But Tosfot says, but if there is a minhag ta'ut, if there's a minhag that is the practice is put into place because of a mistake or a mistaken premise, then that minhag does not hold weight. And you do not have to keep the isur and you don't have to not be matirid in front of people. But Moshe Feinstein, in one of the early Tuchumin books, writes on this issue of minhag ta'ut. He proves the fact that a minhag ta'ut holds no weight. And one is not bound by a minhag ta'ut. If one's parents kept a minhag, but it was a minhag that was clearly based on an improper premise, or it was a minhag that had no basis, then the children do not have to keep the minhag of the parents because it's a minhag ta'ut. Minhag ta'ut doesn't carry any weight. It's not called a minhag. So first of all, Rav Moshe Feinstein proves that. And here you see Tosafot saying the same thing. But then he goes on to say, the article happens to be about this topic, I'll give you an example of minhag ta'ut where you do not have to keep what your parents did. And that's standing up for Kiddush on Shabbat day, standing up for Kiddush on Yom Tov. That's whether at night or the day. He says there is no source, there is no reason to stand up for Kiddush on Shabbat day and to stand up for Kiddush and Yom Tov whatsoever. That's at night and during the day. He says people who stand up are doing it because they have a mistake. They think that they should stand up, but they think it's similar to Kiddush on Friday night. And he says there's no time and no reason for that minhag. And if your parents have that minhag, and you learn, and you realize that that's the case, you do not have to keep the minhag of your parents, and you should switch the minhag to sit down for Kiddush on Shabbat day, and you should sit down for Kiddush on Yom Tov, despite what your parents did, because their minhag was a minhag ta'ot, and it carries absolutely no weight. Right, that was the first topic. The second thing I want to address here is the pasuk itself. The Gemara does something very interesting here. It says, look, the pasuk, when it first says what Mordechai established in terms of Yom Purim, it says this is the nature of Purim. And then it goes later on and shows you that something changed. Yom Tov was left out of the pasuk when the people accepted upon themselves Purim. So many, many years ago, I wrote an article about this. The Gemara ignores the fact that the pasuk actually makes two changes. One change is that the original pasuk says, Simcha u'mishte v'yom tov u'mishloach manot ish l'reyehu. So you have Simcha, Mishte, Yom Tov, and Mishloach Manot Yisrael. Four items that are mentioned in the first pasuk that Mordechai sends out. Then, in the subsequent pasuk, when it describes Purim, when they were Mekabel Purim, there it says, Yimei Mishte V'Simcha. So again, you have Mishte V'Simcha. The order is changed. And Rav Soloveitchik has a piece of Torah on that, why it was changed. U'Mishloach Manot Yisrael, which is also there in the first pasuk. And then, Matanot Le'Avyonim. All of a sudden, Matanot Le'Avyonim shows up. So why did Matanot Le'Avyonim show up here when it wasn't in the first pasuk? How come the Gemara doesn't address that? In the article I wrote, I discuss why Matanot Le'Avyonim came in when Yom Tov was taken out. I won't go through all the details of this, but the basic idea is that the integral part of Yom Tov, or the main theme of Yom Tov, is Matanot Le'Avyonim. We found that in the Gemara in Beit Sam. We talked about the pasuk from Nehemiah that says, the Matanot Le'Nachono, to give gifts to those people that don't have, that the simcha of Yom Tov, the happiness of Yom Tov, is to provide for others. Now, for a person, it's to provide for his family, but not only his family. He has to provide for his family and also those that are less fortunate and don't have that opportunity. And that's a key theme, or one of the primary themes of Yom Tov. And I'll just read you the formulation of the Rambam, because it's so stark, which is, Ukshu ochel v'shoteh, when a person eats and drinks in Yom Tov, which are the mitzvot of Yom Tov, Chayav da'achil ager li'atom ve'almana, im shahaniim ha'umlalim. He has to feed not only his family, but he has to feed the ger, the atom, the almana, those that are less fortunate, and ha'im ha'umlalim, and those that are poverty-stricken, that have nothing. Aval, mish no'el dotot chatzero, someone who locks up his house, v'ochel v'shoteh, hu banav v'ishto, eats, drinks, and is merry with him, his family, and his wife, v'enu machil u'mashkil ha'aniim, and he doesn't take care of the poor, u'lamari nefesh, and those that are despondent, those that don't have things that are good. Ein zu simchat mitzvah. That is not a simcha of mitzvah, ela simchat kresot. That's a simcha of your belly. That's not a simcha of mitzvah. Simcha of mitzvah, and then he quotes a number of psukim to prove this point, but his point is basically that without providing for others, without doing for others the aniyim, that's not called simchat yom tov. And so what you see is that the primary aspect of yom tov is not the isur malacha, but the primary aspect of yom tov is matanot le'avyonim. So when the people rejected the Isur Malacha of Yom Tov, they still maintained the Ikar aspect of Yom Tov, which is Matanot Le'Avyonim. So when they eliminated Yom Tov, which was the Isur Malacha, they still maintained the trappings of a Yom Tov, which is Matanot Le'Avyonim. And the Rambam in his formulation also by Purim says the same thing, which is Mutav La'adam Larbot Matanot Le'Avyonim Larbot Mesu'adato U'Mishloach Manot Le'Reyav. Person should put more emphasis and increase his Matanot Le'Avyonim more than having a big suda, and more than having a lot of mishloach manot. She'en sham simcha gdola umufueret. There is no greater simcha, ela lismach leiv aniyim v'tomim v'almanot v'gerim, than to provide for those that are less fortunate. Shem mesameach leiv umlalim ha'ile domeh l'shechina. Because someone who provides for these people is like God, is similar to God. In Mateo Deo, which is imitating God, which is the achayot ruach shvalim, achayot lev nidgaim, pasuk in Yeshayahu. So you see that Rambam's formulation of the emphasis on matanot le'avyonim is equally applicable on Yom Tov as it is on Purim. And that's why, the Gemara doesn't say this, but that was my suggestion as to why the Yom Tov turned into matanot le'avyonim in the switch of the psukim, is because the rejection of Yom Tov was a rejection of the Isur Melacha. On the other hand, the matanot le'avyonim was the acceptance of the concept of Yom Tov, which is that the concept of Yom Tov is to provide for others and make sure that others are happy, because that's really the true simcha. All right, there's more to say about it. I'm just giving you some highlights of that topic. The last thing I wanted to discuss is with regards to Avelut. Tosafot over here quotes with regards to Asurim Behesped Utanit, the one may not eulogize and fast on these days. It says, Heshiv Rashi. Rashi said, V'chi mi natan koach l'mei Megillat Esther l'dchot Avelut. Who empowered Megillat Esther, the days of Purim, to override Avelut? Avelut, that's possibly Deoraita. Or even it's not Deoraita, it's a mitzvah derabanan that has a lot of tokev. Who all of a sudden gave permission that Purim comes and overrides the Avelut? Ella, Tosfot comes to a conclusion, Vadai, lo havi aleinyan sheino flim al pneihem. The idea of the simcha of the days of Purim is only that we don't say tachanun, and we don't have hesped, and we don't have tanit. Aval, in terms of Avelut, Avelut is still present on Purim. Avelut does not disappear on Purim. Now, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in Tafresh Tzadi Vav, in Siv Dalet, he says, Kol divrei avilut noagim b'chanukah u'purim, that all of avilut applies on Chanukah and Purim, meaning that it's a full-fledged day of avilut, and the avel is noeg like an avel on Chanukah u'purim. They do not override his avilut. Haga, umikol makom yelech the Beit HaGnesset lishmoa ha-migilah. The Rama brings down that he should screw out the shul to hear the Megillah. Bimichol le'esof minyan le'beito, he has the ability to bring a minyan to his house, likrot the Megillah, adif tvei, that is still better. Now, the Rama says something amazing. V'yeshomrim, She'ein avelut noeg b'purim, lo b'yudalet v'lo b'tedvav. There are those that say there is no avelut on the 14th and 15th of Adar. V'chein noagim, and he says that's the minog. V'afilu avelut yom rishon nitchem mipnei purim. Even avelut of the first day, which according to many rishonim is doraita, gets knocked off because of purim, because that's a simcha of the rabbim, overrides the avelut of the yachid. Aval dvarim shebitzina noeg, but private things with regards to avelut is still noeg. Alpha p. Even though there's no minag avilut purim, ole minyan shiva yemei avilut, it counts towards the days of shiva kamo shabbat. Chaim pasak rab batzmo betur. And that's the din, that's what the Rama says. So Rama says, it happens to be this is a machloket mosin moed katan between the Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, which is with regards to Shabbat, everybody agrees that there's no avilut before hesu. You can't have public avilut on Shabbat. But dvarim shibitzina, private things the avel keeps on Shabbat. And Shabbat always counts to the Yemei HaShiva, counts as one of the 7 days of Avelut. With regards to Yom Tov, that's not the case. With regards to Yom Tov, there is no Avelut on Yom Tov. There's a Machloket Tosafot. And the Rambam says, when you say there's no Avelut on Yom Tov, that means the Gamre. There's no Avelut, period. Not before Esir, not Bitzina, there's no Avelut at all. And therefore Yom Tov does not count as one of the days of Shiva, or if the Shiva started beforehand, it cuts off the Shiva. On the other hand, Tosafot believes that just like by Shabbat, Dvarim Shebitzina apply, so too by Yom Tov, Dvarim Shebitzina apply. He agrees, obviously the Gemara says this, that Yom Tov is not Ole and the Minyan Shiva, but he says that Dvarim Shebitzina apply. So the Rama is doing the same thing by Purim, and saying that even though there's no Avelut for Esyo on Purim, still the Dvarim Shebitzina apply. But when he says the Dvarim Shebitzina apply, he says this is more like Shabbat than it is like Yom Tov, in the fact that it does count the Minyan Shiva. So the Rama makes a distinction here between Yom Tov, where Shiva does not apply, and it cuts off Shiva, versus Purim, where there is no minag avilut before Hesya, but it counts the minyan shivan, does not cut off the avilut. There is a chiluk that's brought in the name of the Brisker Rav by the Emek Brocha. The Emek Brocha is one of his Talmidim, who wrote a chiluk trying to explain, not exactly this Rama, but other items, that why is it by Purim that we don't knock off avilut, and it counts as one of the days of avilut of shivan? That's not true by Yom Tov. So they suggested over there that the nature of simcha is different on Yom Tov than it is on Purim. The mitzvah of Simcha on Yom Tov is lismach lifnei Hashem. It's the mismach be Hashem and lifnei Hashem. And therefore, only items that generate that type of Simcha are counted as Simcha, and anything that is against that or ruins that does not apply. Versus Purim, where the din of Simcha is independent of Simcha lifnei Hashem. The idea of Purim is simply to be happy or to enjoy the day. Enjoying the day can be manifest or can be facilitated by any type of Simcha. And therefore, the simcha of Purim is different than the simcha of a Yom Tov. The simcha of a Yom Tov, where you have to be samech lifnei Hashem, cannot live together or cannot be reconciled with avelut, because avelut doesn't allow one to be lifnei Hashem. So avelut is knocked off entirely. On Purim, the whole idea is a physical simcha, not of lifnei Hashem, but the excitement or the simcha itself. And therefore, that may not be irreconcilable with Purim or the simcha of Purim, because one could still have avelut and not be then a problem of having simcha or the physical pleasures that are associated with Purim. So that's the way that he explains the difference between Yom Tov and Purim. This has, it's manifest in other items, including getting married. You're allowed to get married on Purim. You're not allowed to get married on Yom Tov. There are other items that are also explained through this distinction in Purim and Yom Tov. Now, my brother-in-law made a suggestion, which is very interesting. We just saw over here, the Ramah says that with regards to Purim, that there is no Avelut on Purim. If you actually look at the Ramah carefully, the Ramah, in many of the halachot, tries to make Purim into a Yom Tov. He gives it the trappings of Yom Tov in terms of many halachot. First of all, he says that on Purim, one should get dressed up in Big Day Shabbat and Big Day Yom Tov. Number two is, he says, the minhag is not to do malacha on Purim. In addition to that, he says, avilut doesn't apply. There's no avilut perfecio on Purim. Then he says later on in the next siman, with regards to su'udah, the main su'udah is during the day. And the su'udah at night doesn't count. Nevertheless, the Ramah says that one should have extra food at night and extra su'udah at night, which would be akin to Yom Tov. In addition to that, with regards to not getting married on Purim, the Shulchan Aruch says, Mutar lisa isha bu Purim. One is allowed to get married on Purim. Here, the Ramah doesn't make any comment, but in the Darche Moshe, and in the Kolbo says he's Sarchiyon, he thinks that maybe there is a restriction against getting married on Purim. In the Darche Moshe, the Ramah also says that if he had his druthers, I think he would say that there is no getting married on Purim. So what you see the Ramah is consistently doing is trying to make Purim more like a Yom Tov than what the Shulchan Aruch is paskening. And therefore, in all these halachot, the Ramah keeps saying the minhag is not to do malacha, the minhag is not to have a levut, the minhag is to eat the suda at nighttime. All those things that would bring you closer to being a Yom Tov, the Ramah does. And that might be a distinction between the Shulchan Aruch's view of Purim as not being a Yom Tov versus the Ramah, it's not a Yom Tov, but he's trying to make it as much as a Yom Tov as possible. Okay, now the Gemara continues discussing this position of Chizkiyah, which is Gufa. Chizkiyah Kari B'Tveria Bar Beisar V'Chameishar. Chizkiyah read in Tveria on the 14th and 15th, Mesapkele, he had a doubt, Im Gufet Chumam Yimot Yeshua Binoni, Ilo. He didn't know if he was surrounded by a wall from the time Yeshua Binon or not. I says, Mesapkele, Milta de Tveria. Wait a minute, why is Tveria any question? V'Aktiv. We have an explicit pasuk in Sefer Yoshua, which says, with regards to the cities of Naphtali, Vare Mivtzar. Mivtzar mean fortified cities, cities with walls around them, are Hatzidim, Tzer, Vichamat, Rakat, Vikinaret. These are all cities that are found in the area of Naphtali around the Kinaret. These are cities that were walled cities at the time of Yoshua Minun because these are fortified cities. Vikaimalon. And we have a Mesorah that Rakat Zu Tveria. The Rakat is another name for Tveria. So if that's the case, what's the Safek here? It has a wall around it. Gemara says, "Hayna time of the Misfak Belay Mishum Dechad Gisa Shura Diyama Havat." His safek was because Tveria has walls on three sides around it. The fourth side of Tveria faces the Yama Kinneret, so it doesn't have a wall on the side that it faces the water. So that was his safek. Gemara says, "Yochi, am I Misfak Belay? Why does he have any doubt? Vade Lav Chomai? It's definitely not a wall. That side that's facing the water is not classified as a wall." The Tanya, we have a Braita, Asher Lo Choma. This is going back to what we saw yesterday about Batei Rei Choma. Houses in a walled city, the rules, when you sell them, what are the rules of redemption and the permanence of sale? It says there, Asher Lo Chama, that it has a wall. Velo Shur Igar Saviv, and not, Shur means a wall, Igar means roofs. But that means that it's a city whose wall is created by the houses. You can have a wall around a city, you have a wall, and then you build a house inside of the city, or you can have the fact that they build the houses so proximate to each other that they generate a wall around the city. Right, we have that by Yericho. Rachava Zona is Bechomahi Yoshavet. She lives in the wall. Her house is part of the wall. In general, the people who lived in the wall were the poor people. They lived right inside the wall or by the wall. They were more exposed to the outside, but they were also, the wall was built on top of their houses. They used their houses to create the wall around the city. So you have instances where the wall is created by the houses. So the Braita here tells us that when it comes to Choma, Choma must be a physical wall, not a wall created by houses. Prat, the Tveria, Shema Chomata. And here it's explicit. That excludes Tveria, whose fourth wall is the Yam Kinneret. And therefore it doesn't count as a walled area. Mar says, wait a minute. That's the Inyan Batei Choma, Lo Misfakule. That's with regards to a walled city, with regards to a house in a walled city, with the rules of selling a house in a walled city. There we have no doubt that it's not Batei Arei Choma. Kiga Misapkule, the Inyan Mikra Megillah. With regards to Mikra Megillah, we have a Safek, because the description of unwalled cities by Megillah is not Asher Lo Choma with the Lamed Aleph that doesn't have a wall, but rather Prazim. So what's the definition? My Prazim. What does Prazim mean? Prazim means open. My Mukafim. And what does it mean, Mukaf, that it has a wall around it? Tichtev Egami Mikra Megillah. To define for us what is, who reads on the 15th and reads on the 14th. Shumtahani Miglu, Vani Lo Miglu. Is the definition because one is exposed and one is not exposed? And Tiferes is exposed because it doesn't have a wall on the fourth side. What does that have to do with defense of both positions? Prazi is a city that doesn't have defenses because it's open and exposed, whereas a walled city or mukafim are cities that are fortified or protected because they have a barrier between them. So on three sides, Tiferes has a barrier of a wall. On the fourth side, it has the water as a barrier, so it is a defensible position. And that's the difference. That's why he has a doubt. Now this Gemara here actually has support for two positions that we saw before. One was in yesterday's daf. Rashi and Tosafot argue about the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi with regards to walled cities, whether the wall has to be before the houses or after the houses. So Rashi over there says that din only applies to Batei Rechoma, not to Megillah. But Tosafot said it equally applies to both of them. The Ran, in support of Rashi, quotes our Gemara over here and says, you see that there are other distinctions between Megillah and Batei Rechoma. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's statement about Batei Rechoma might be only for Batei Rechoma, not for Megillah, because there is such a distinction we're making right here. Other position that helps is the Ramban that we brought at the beginning of the Masechta, who said that the difference between the walled and unwalled cities was the fact that the walled cities were protected and they didn't feel the danger of Haman's decree. So you see over here that the Gemara actually entertains that the possibility that the idea of being a walled city is about whether it's a defensible position. Not like by Batei Rechoma, but here by Megillah, there's this possibility that being a defensive position, what matters. And that would accord with the Ramban's sheet over there, that the whole idea why the people on the 14th or the unwalled cities celebrated was because they really had a miracle, because they were exposed to the enemies. Whereas the people in the walled cities were not as exposed, because they lived in Eretz Yisrael, they had a walled city around them. They felt less threatened by the decree of Haman. And therefore, they felt that the salvation or the miracle was less for them, and that's why the 15th was made for the walled cities as a secondary Purim, not as part of the primary Purim. But it's also supported by this idea here that defensible positions is the definition of a walled city. Okay, now, Rav Asi kari Megillah b'Hutzal b'Arbeisar b'Chameisar. Rav Asi in the city of Hutzal would read on the 14th and the 15th. Misap gilei imukavet chumam imot Yeshua ben Nun ilo. He had a safek whether it had a wall around it from the time Yeshua ben Nun or not. Igada amar. There's some that say that this was what Rav Asi did. Amar Rav Asi hay Hutzal the Beit Binyamin mukavet chumam imot Yeshua ben Nun, that he had a definitive decision about Hutzal, and he says this is the Hutzal of Beit Binyamin, which is a city that did have a wall around it from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, and therefore you would read on the 15th. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kavina Talia. When I was a young pleh, meaning that when I was a youngster, Amina Milta Dishilna Lesabaya, I said something that was asked of the elders, Bishtachach Kavati. And the way that I thought the answer was the way that the elders said it, which is Chamat Zotuveria. When the pasuk says Chamat, that's synonymous with Tiferia. The lamini krashma Chamat. So why is it called Chamat if its name is Tiferia? Ashum Chamei Tiferia. It's called Chamat because of the hot springs that are there, that are still present there till today in Tiferia. So Chamat described the hot springs which Tiferia was famous for. Rakat zutzipori. Rakat is synonymous with Tzipori. The lamini krashma Rakat. Bishum demidlaya gerakta denaro. Tzipori was up on a mountain. We know Tiferia was down in the valley. It's on the coast of the Yam Kinaret. Tzipori was up higher in the mountains. So Tzipori was in a high place. So it's Rakat, which is like from Rakata Dinara. Rakata Dinara means the banks of the river, but it's talking about the steep banks of the river, maybe like fords on the side of the river. So too, Tzipori was high up on the mountains. It wasn't down below near the river. Kinaret, Zu Ginosar. Kinaret is the same as Ginosar. V'namani krashma Kinaret. Why is it called Kinaret if the place is known as Ginosar? Demitika peira kikala de kinare, because the fruits in that area were so sweet, like the sound of a kinor, of a lyre. So just like the lyre makes a beautiful sound, so too the fruits of Ginosar were superior and they were very sweet, and that's why it's called Kinaret. So over here, Rabbi Yochanan, based on the pasuk that we saw before from Yeshua, that describes a number of walled cities in Naphtali, it gave over there names of cities: Chamat, Rakat, and Kinaret. And in those cities, we're seeing Rabbi Yochanan telling us what the definition of each one of them is. Chamat is Tiferia, Rakat is Tzipori, and Kinaret is Ginosar. Okay, we'll stop over here. We're going to see other opinions with regard to this. I mean, we already saw one other opinion, which is the bright that we quoted before was Rakat zu Tiferia. The Rakat was Tiferia, not Chamat. But we'll see. Tomorrow's daf, we'll see other opinions as to what each of these names were. Okay, we'll stop over here.